Lemonada.
This is Eric Alvarez. One quick note before we begin. This episode is available in Spanish. You are listening to the English version, which means I will try to say soccer instead of football. Para escucharlo en español, busca el podcast Mi Mundialista Favorita.
Lionel Messi was the highest paid athlete in all of sports in 2021. Forbes estimates that the Argentinian striker earned $130 million in 2022. What about the woman who is nicknamed the female Messi?
Not so much.
Estefania Bonini, who captained Argentina at the 2019 World Cup, is fighting to change the staggering inequity that exists in professional soccer.
It's difficult because a lot of girls have to study, they have to work, and they have to do other things to be able to get to training with just enough money or eating whatever they can get their hands on.
Forbes estimates that Lionel Messi earned $75 million on the pitch in 2022.
What can the average female player expect to earn?
The basic contract for most first division female Argentine soccer players calls for about $40 US a week.
That's right, $40 US per week.
That salary was below Argentina's national poverty line in 2022. It's also a far cry from the minimum salary for top-tier professional male soccer players. In fact, the minimum salary for women is about 12% of what it is for men.
It's
obvious that, like everything else, we're going to call it business. Because at a professional level, you manage money, and that's the way it is. But you have to invest in a business. First, you have to invest.
I'm Eric Alvarez, and I'm joined by my decorated football co-host. She's an Olympian who won the World Cup with the U.S. Women's National Team and now plays as a defender for the NWSL champion, Portland Thorns, Megan Klinkenberg.
Thank you, Eric. This is my new favorite Futbolista, where you will get to know football's brightest stars and the causes they're fighting for off the pitch.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Megan, we have to start with some really important context here. Estefania Bonini was voted one of the world's best 11 players in 2021 by her peers alongside Alex Morgan and Marta. Now, she's a forward for Atletico Madrid and for Argentina's national team, but explain to us why she's nicknamed the female Messi.
Because you, when you play against her, you are terrified of being made look stupid. She used to play for Washington Spirit, and I was in the league, and she would do things on the ball where you would be going one way, and then she'd be 5 yards down the field in the other direction. And that would happen frequently during games, so I used to hope that she was always on the other side.
Yeah, I can imagine as a defender that must be a frightening thing to see running at you.
Especially when it could live on in memes and clips and GIFs forever.
Now, that nickname, the female Messi, turns out she actually doesn't love the comparison. We'll get to that later in the episode, but I want to bring in a very special guest host. She's a former center back for the Colombian national team who has spoken out herself on gender equity in her home country and spent time with Estefania to help us tell her story. Welcome, Isa Echeverri. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
So, Isa, the issue of gender equity hits very close to home for you. In 2019, you and your teammate, Melissa Ortiz, spoke out about the lack of resources for the Colombian women's national team. Tell us about that viral video you posted.
We posted a video in 2019, and it was a life-changing moment for both of us. We didn't realize it was going to go so viral.
We feel threatened. They don't pay us. There's no international flights. The uniforms are old. The Federation
we were just being honest about our conditions in the country and our conditions in the national team. And we didn't expect the amount of media, of people, of repercussions this video had. But at the end, I think we really made a change. And it was the first step of a lot of changes within the Colombian football system.
And what was the response to that?
It cost me my time in the national team. After that video, I wasn't in the national team anymore. But I think it was very necessary for us to get our voice up, to be heard, and to tell Colombia that something wasn't good enough. And people react to it, and the way that people did just made me proud and makes me hopeful of a brighter future for women's football.
We'll hear more about your personal story in a bit, but I know there are some similarities with Estefania's. Let's hear what you learned from your conversation with her.
Muchas gracias por aceptarme.
Thank you for accepting my invitation. You're going to be my first interview in my life. So, an honor, a pleasure.
De verdad, un honor y un gusto.
I wanted to thank you first for the interview, and what a pleasure to be your first interviewee.
I've known Estefania since 2014, when we played against each other at Copa America, but I never had the opportunity to interview her. I spoke to her for close to an hour about her upbringing, having to play soccer with boys, and about the fight for gender equity in sports in Argentina. And it became clear that to understand where Argentina stands in its fight for equal treatment for female players, I have to tell you a tale of two countries, the United States and Argentina. We'll start the story in 2019.
USA! USA!
It's July 10, 2019. The U.S. women's national team is in New York City 3 days after winning its second consecutive World Cup. At the end of a celebratory parade, we hear team co-captain Megan Rapinoe at a podium, flanked by then-Major Bill de Blasio, Good Morning America's Robin Roberts, and U.S. soccer officials, and of course, her teammates.
This is crazy. This is absolutely insane.
Now, let's go to Argentina. It's July 15, 2019. Weeks after getting eliminated from its first World Cup in 12 years, the Argentina team manager releases the list of players who will play at the upcoming Pan American Games. There are a few glaring absences from the list. One of them, team captain Estefania Banini, who helped Argentina secure its first ever World Cup point, is not on the roster, and nobody can explain why. Let's go back to New York. Members of the U.S. women's team are getting the keys to the city. Fans cheering at full volume and Federation officials are all smiles, even though they're in the middle of a legal battle. 3 months earlier, the U.S. women's national team sued U.S. soccer over what they called institutionalized gender discrimination. Here's Megan Rapinoe addressing then-president of U.S. soccer, Carlos Cordeiro, during the parade.
To the Federation, Carlos, thank you. You were incredible this World Cup. I know that you got a little stick when you were up here. couple chants. I think that's a sign of affection, though, right? Like, everybody gets booed. Everybody in the position of power gets booed.
It's a contentious moment, but still celebratory. Back in Argentina, it's just contentious. No one is celebrating anything. Hours after the team roster is published, Estefania Vanini posts something on her Instagram account. The picture, a portrait of Estefania at the World Cup. Brows furrowed, visibly upset. The caption, "I want nothing more than to be on the national team. I've been training since I was 5, fighting for equality without discrimination, however I can. The coaches decided to leave me out of the team." She goes on to say, "The reason for this is very simple. We had a talk with the technical team that went to the World Cup because they are not delivering at the caliber we need. We want real growth for female soccer. We want to be as good as the best teams."
Unfortunately, the first thing that they did was to remove us from the national team. There were several of us who commented on the things that could be improved.
What Estefania wanted to improve was the poor conditions, she says, the Argentine women's team have long been subjected to. In 2017, the men's national team traveled to games in chartered planes. That same year, the women's national team had to sleep in the bus that took them to a game against Uruguay because they didn't have stipends for hotels. The men's coach at the time made a reported $176,000 a month, while the women's team endured a 2-year stretch with no head coach.
The life of a soccer player in Argentina is complicated because athletes still can't dedicate themselves 100% to the profession. There are some players who make a living, but that's not the reality. It's not what everyone can do. It's difficult because a lot of girls have to study, they have to work, and they have to do other things to be able to get to training with just enough money or eating whatever they can get their hands on.
This is Eric Alvarez, back here with my co-host, World Cup champion, Megan Klingenberg. Megan, when you hear these discrepancies between the men's and women's national teams in Argentina, what comes to mind?
Well, it sounds familiar. It's something that we've been dealing with and women throughout the world are dealing with every day. We have been lucky to tackle a lot of the inequality in the U.S. It also brings me to a big question, like, where is Lionel Messi and the other male players' voices in this? And why are they not saying something? Because it's not like the women would ever be taking resources from them. They have so many resources. It wouldn't be to the detriment of anyone else to invest more in women's soccer. So I always have to ask, where are the men and why aren't they using their voices?
After this break, we'll see what happens.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed, leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Happened after Estefania hit share on that social media post.
After her Instagram post, the backlash was swift and decisive.
Nos costó estar 3 años fuera de...
We were punished by not being allowed to play for the national team. These were very hard times, very sad times, because all we wanted was to improve this branch, to have what we needed to really grow. And there were reactions of all kinds from the previous coaching staff, leaving us out of tournament calls, and there were also many reactions from people.
Reacciones de la gente.
Reactions from the public were mixed. The post received comments from "You're a warrior" to "Don't bite the hand that feeds you. Have humility. That's what you need."
I think that someone behind a social network can say anything, and there were a lot of comments out there. Some of them were hurtful, and some others showed a lot of support. They knew a little of what we were talking about, that we wanted to keep growing. I always try to bring out the positive things, and I think it worked. It worked so that Argentina could have a change, and so that we can grow today under a new coaching staff.
This is why Estefania thinks that what she calls a pito worked. To understand what was happening at the time, here is some important context.
Bueno, Macarena es futbolista.
Well, Macarena is a soccer player, a representative of many female players, and who today is fighting for her rights in that realm.
En ese ámbito, ¿es así?
In February 2019, 5 months before Stefania's post, Argentine soccer player Macarena Sanchez sued the Argentina Soccer Federation and her club, UAI Urquiza. The club suddenly let her go halfway through the season without payment. Here's what Macarena told Argentina's Canal 5 Noticias.
Ay, porque nosotras hacemos exactamente lo mismo que hacemos.
We serve the exact same function as the men. The difference is that they are deemed employees and we are not.
Bueno, ellos son tomados como trabajadores.
About a month after the lawsuit was filed, the Argentina Football Association made an announcement.
Como decía Sergio, una de las primeras federaciones.
Like Sergio said, we're one of the first federations almost at the worldwide level to allow its women's soccer players to have professional contracts.
Jugadoras puedan ser profesionales.
Women's soccer was professionalized in Argentina that day, mandating clubs to have at least 8 players on a professional contract. The AFA would give each club $3,000 a month to cover those salaries. A month later, on April 12, 2019, Macarena Sanchez signed the first professional contract for a female soccer player in Argentina. Almost 100 years after men's soccer was professionalized in Argentina. So when Estefania made her demands, she was adding her voice to the chorus of calls for more resources. Amid the backlash, there wasn't much she felt she could do. 2019 passed, then 2020 and 2021, and nothing. No calls for one of the leading scorers to come back to the national team. Finally, in 2022, the team hired a new head coach, Germán Portanova, and she got a call.
Hay un video muy bonito cuando vuelves a la selección.
There is a very nice video of your first return match with the national team in Brazil, and I remember it clearly. The camera focused on you literally crying or with glassy eyes when you were chanting the anthem. What did you have to do to return to the team?
Volver a jugar con Argentina.
Lo único que hice fue tratar de mantenerme.
The truth is, the only thing I did was to try to maintain my soccer levels among my clubs. I took my team Levante to the Champions League, and later I was chosen as one of the best players in the world.
Dentro de las mejores jugadoras del mundo.
Now that she's back on the team, things are way better. But there's still a lot of work to do, she says.
I would love to be able to experience it because it's my country and I want to live that reality. But I think that there is still a long way to go before generating that opportunity for athletes to be able to dedicate themselves 100% to soccer so that the world can really see Argentina's full potential. Having players who have to do several things obviously risks their performance.
Obviamente el rendimiento va bajando.
There have been a lot of changes since 2019. In 2021, the AFA announced first division clubs must increase their paid contracts to 16 players. It also mandated first division players be paid a minimum of $40 a week.
Me parece muy importante.
It does seem very important to me that soccer teams start to do something about the gender wage gap, and why not in South America as well? But I think there are other previous steps that other national teams and other countries had to do first.
There is reason for hope.
The president of the federation, since he took his role, has always opted for women's football, and I think that was important at that time.
Estefania says the goal would be to have the infrastructure the United States has for young girls. She saw it firsthand when she played in D.C. for the Washington Spirit.
A día de hoy, creo que están adelantados por muchísimos años.
I think they are ahead of the game by many years. Schools support soccer at a very professional level. The truth is that they give soccer an impressive value, and it is something we need to admire. And it's not only soccer, it's any sport. So I think it's something that they definitely have to do in Latin America. When I started, I remember that they wouldn't let me play soccer with men. They had to give me special permissions so that I could do physical education with men, and I was the only girl. Men played soccer and women volleyball. And obviously, I wanted to play soccer because it was the sport that I was passionate about.
Fútbol, que era el deporte que me apasionaba.
When Estefania was first starting out, the five-year-old and her parents approached at least 6 boys' soccer clubs for a chance to play.
They said no to me because they only had men's soccer. And when we arrived at the club where he was, we asked him and he said quite naturally, yes, why not?
Here came this little blonde girl who was very short, wondering if we would accept her. And of course, I didn't make any objection.
That's Eduardo Perez, the one coach that accepted her.
Sometimes, when we were going to a neighborhood tournament, some municipal tournament, I had to go with her parents and make them sign a kind of document where the parents absorbed the organizers of that tournament of responsibility if anything happened to her.
He, from his way of being, from how he sees women, I think he is a person who not only supports women's soccer, but also thinks it's normal.
Believe it or not, sometimes if a player goes to World Cup, the player loses her job because she wants to fulfill her dream. Or it's difficult to play because she was not given permission. So, on the topic of professionalism, women's soccer being professional in Argentina is half true. It's just not professional, not in economic terms, and then in terms of dedication. Players may have to do other types of jobs in order to survive.
Estefania says she's received explicit support from some players on the men's roster.
Acuña fue a vernos un partido, bueno...
Acuña went to see a game, and there he crossed a couple of messages with Rodri de Paul. They're starting to get to know us, and that's very much appreciated. And well, obviously, we would need that support a little more and for it to be considered normal. I think that is the most important thing for this to really grow.
For as far as we've come, what happened to Estefania growing up is still happening.
I get messages from mothers saying if I could please share certain things. The girls and their daughters are not allowed to play with men. And it's sad. Sad because more than 20 years have passed and the same thing is still happening.
I want to go back to that tale of two countries again. It's February 22nd, 2022 in the U.S.
This morning, a victory for the U.S. women's soccer team off the field. A gender pay gap has been at the crux of a long-running legal dispute between U.S. soccer and its players.
The team has reached a $24 million equal pay settlement with the sport's national governing body.
And less than 1 month later,
an historic agreement for U.S. soccer and equal pay. The men's and women's U.S. national teams will both now receive equal pay and equal prize money, including at World Cups.
Let's go to Argentina. It's April 6, 2023. Argentina just played a friendly against Venezuela. Here's how Telemundo Deportes commentator and fellow Argentine Andrés Cantor remembers it.
They had, I think, 30,000 spectators, something unheard of for Argentina, and I think that helps the women grow.
Here is how Stefania remembers it.
There were 31,800 people. I know the exact number. It was something important for us. It made us feel very strong and a good feeling. We got the support of those people out there. 32,000 people, or almost 32,000 Argentinians, all standing, screaming, swelling. This is something unique for me. Obviously, like someone from Argentina, this was historic for women's football because we broke a record, and that says a lot about what we're changing in our society. We did something similar to what the men's national team does. This euphoria of going to support the national teams, I think, is something that we are achieving together.
This tale of two countries is still one of contrast, but maybe one day they'll be the same story.
Isa, clearly there are a lot of differences between the United States and Argentina, but also Latin America in general. You played in Colombia before you retired. What is the atmosphere around women's soccer in your home country?
It's completely different than what we see in the States. In the States, everybody is supporting the team and women have a place in the sport. But in my region, women's football is just at the end of everyone's mind. Just a clear example of what I'm saying is an owner of a club in Colombia said out loud in a media press conference that we were just a bunch of lesbians and just women who were drunk all the time. Which is crazy to think about because we are athletes and we are very respected human beings. So that is just a clear example on how back and how this machism society is just holding our sports back.
And there's those who may say, oh, that's just him talking. It doesn't mean anything. But when a large part of society thinks that way, it can have very real ramifications. What were the conditions like when you played?
Conditions were hard. We didn't have our own uniforms. We used to wear these big uniforms from the U-20 male Colombian national team players. We stayed in hotels. We had to pay for our own flights. The economic issue is also a critical part of women's football. A lot of my teammates had to just work two jobs and play football in order to survive and to keep playing. So I think the conditions were not great, but I think slowly we're getting better and future generations are going to have a better time and we're fighting for that.
And let me ask you this. Do you think Latin America can replicate the United States equal pay model? And what would it take to get there?
Yes, I think definitely we can do it. It's just going to take longer. It's going to take a lot of time. And I think the main thing we have to find are some type of regulatory framework policies that we can apply into these countries and make people in power feel that they have to do something about women in sports. It's not just women's football, but a lot of the women in sports need these regulatory frameworks to actually see change.
And I want to ask you this. How does Estefania feel about being called the female Messi?
Definitely, she likes being called the female Messi, but she also says that people should get to know her and her last name and all her teammates' names before comparing her to Messi. So I think that's a very brave answer from her. She really is a very vocal player, and Messi is a great best player in history, but she's also an amazing player and people should get to learn her name.
Megan, one argument you see all the time when this subject comes up is the people that say, well, the women shouldn't make as much as the men because they generate less revenue. So what's your response to that?
Well, it's a very simple argument, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But it's not simple when you dig into it. The real difference is that men have been playing sport for much longer than women have been playing sport. We have not been allowed to play sport up until the very recent history. And so that makes a difference. On top of that, you have to think about the time that men's leagues have been in existence. They've been in existence hundreds of years in some cases. And our league is 11 years old. There's no way that you can expect an 11-year-old league to compete with a 100-year-old league who's been through all of the ups and downs, that knows what works and what doesn't in terms of how to speak to their fans, how to market to their fans. And then on top of it, the investment is incredibly different. And this is the biggest point. So the investment, especially from the top down, is completely unequal. So I'm talking FIFA, I'm talking confederations like CONCACAF, I'm talking federations like US Soccer, I'm talking club teams, I'm talking all the way down to the youth level. The investment is staggeringly different. Once we start to make up that difference in investment, then we can see the potential of what a women's league is. And I don't think we could ever compare revenue without equal investment. Without that, it's an apples to oranges thing and it doesn't make any sense.
Megan, thank you.
Thank you.
On the next episode of My New Favorite Futbolista, this Panamanian midfielder opens up about losing her mother unexpectedly.
I would talk to my mom and I would say, Mom, give me strength. Give me strength, which is what I think you want. This is what you loved, watching me play soccer. Do you want me to go to the World Cup? Give me strength. Just give me strength.
Get to know Marta Cox on the next episode of My New Favorite Futbolista. Thank you for listening to My New Favorite Futbolista. There will be over 700 players at the World Cup, so we have more inspiring stories to tell. Go back to the My New Favorite Futbolista feed right now to hear previous episodes, and make sure to subscribe to get future episodes automatically downloaded to your device.
This episode of My New Favorite Futbolista was produced by NBC Universal Local. Megan Klingenberg and I, Eric Alvarez, were your hosts. Isa Echeverri was our guest correspondent. Fernando Hurtado wrote this episode. James Jeffrey was the editor. Jeremy Berg served as executive producer. Fernando Hurtado and Seth Rubenroit were the supervising producers. Aaron Pinnell and Rosangela Payan were the motion graphics designers. Miguel Estrada, Brad Fossler, James Jeffrey, Michael Katowski, Erica Messick, Sanjesh Singh, Whitney Eirich, Chelsea Turner, Amy Burns, Allison Stubb, Nate Fall, Matt Campbell, Mike Brown, Francesca Giamo, and Brandon Galvan were the production crew. Stephen Dawson was the operations manager. Ray Rodriguez, Miguel Estrada, Rafael Virella, and Fernando Hurtado provided translations.